Hi, and welcome to the Climate Minute, your source for insight and perspective on global warming news. My name is Ted McIntyre, and this show is for the week of March 5th, 2019. Today we're joined by our co-host, the author and educator, Ms. Mariah Tinker. How you doing, Mariah?
I'm well. How are you?
Very well, very well. Glad to have you along with us, as always. So let me set up the stage for this discussion, Mariah. The so-called President of the United States has been obsessed with a wall along the southern border now for since 2015 or so. Right? He's wanted to build that wall. And, of course, everyone is now familiar with the tortured history of the vote in Congress to not give him the wall, and then the shutdown of the government. And then coming out of the shutdown of the government, what Mr. Trump did was to declare a national emergency, which invokes sweeping powers, or could potentially sweeping powers. I don't know if the guy's got the gumption to do anything, but in principle, he set a precedent where he can invoke a national emergency, which is a right given to him by the Congress. He can invoke a national emergency on almost any grounds that he wants and suddenly have access to certain monies that he can move around or to declare activities that shall happen based on his own say-so. And of course, what the guy in the White House wants to do is to get a bunch of money and move it down and try and build his so-called slatted structure on the border down there, right?
That Mexico was going to pay for,
it was going to pay for, right? They can. So anyway, so everyone knows that. And of course, the thing that makes me crazy is the idea that the first thing everyone says is, oh, Mr. Trump, if you declare an emergency, just imagine some Democrat someday will declare a national emergency for guns or climate change or something. Wouldn't that be terrible? Isn't that reason? And it makes my blood boil because, I mean, declaring a national emergency for a non-emergency situation is in and of itself a bad act. You don't have to, like, argue against it because the other guy that you're so afraid of is going to do something much worse. But having said that, it does raise the question of, what about a climate emergency? So tell me, Mariah, what do you think? Where are we?
Of course, the key point in what you just said was declaring a national emergency for something that's not an emergency, right? There are several outspoken people who know these things who've said there is no emergency at the border that a wall will fix. There are problems, but a wall is not going to fix it, right? So there are no data to back up that national emergency. And yet we have reams of data that would back up a national emergency if we do need to declare it, right? So I'm certainly, while I'm not happy that Trump has declared a national emergency for this border wall, and I agree with you that it shouldn't be sort of like, well, he declared a national emergency, so we can declare a national emergency. I mean, I just don't think that's great policy. Or as you said, you know, is this a democracy, right? You know, are the people still running the country when the president can just sort of do whatever he wants? Even when the majority of the country is against it, I mean, there's no question that it is not a popular thing to do.
Well, tell me this. If a president... President Tinker in the year 2020, what would she do if she were president and to combat climate change and declare a national emergency? I mean, what kinds of stuff would she do?
Madam President. Madam President. Let's see. I mean, so first I'd have to celebrate because, hey, first woman president.
Yeah, well, there
right?
you go. There you go. Mean, and what you can do is you can celebrate on the shores of New Jersey shores where you declare offshore drilling to be banned forever, right?
Right.
That's where you could have your party.
Right. Yeah. So, I mean, it does give the national emergency I think that it's the, I read something that said it gives the president nearly 150 special powers. So I'd be like Superwoman over here, right? I'd have a lot of special powers.
I'd give myself X-ray vision and the ability to disappear.
And to leap really high when really the high, oceans come rising. So there's a, you get a ton of power. And as far as Dan Farber, a professor of law at the University of California, Los Angeles, said that here's a couple things you could do, and he put the caveat on that that doesn't mean that it's a good idea to declare a national emergency. But if I was President Tinger, I could put oil drilling on pause because the oil leases are required to have clauses that allow them to be suspended during national emergencies.
Oh, really?
So
uh-huh.
You could say, oh, you know, national emergency, turn them all off.
You mean all the national parks, all the Bureau of Land Management stuff, we could just stop?
The oil leases.
Yeah.
So the oil drilling, yep. The Secretary of Transportation could restrict use of gas-powered vehicles. And, you know, interestingly, there are several cities around the world. Let me think of – I think Madrid is one of them, and I'm sure there's many others, where they actually won't let you drive into the city if the pollution levels are too high.
Oh,
you
really?
Only electric vehicles are allowed in the city. Or I think in Madrid, I don't know that the mayor has put this forward yet, but it's something like it's coming where if you have odd numbered license plates, you can go in one day of the week. And if you have even you can go in the other. That aside, that's a little tangent, but the Secretary of Transportation, the president in a national emergency could say, you know, no gas powered vehicles are allowed to be driven.
Mm-hmm.
The president could give the renewable energy industry an influx of financial support.
You mean like $3.5 billion, $5 billion that just pluck out of the air and put that into wind turbines?
Exactly. Yep. You can extend loan guarantees to critical industries during national emergencies.
Mm-hmm.
And you can, I guess the other, well, you could even, this is another thing that Dan Farber said, you could impose sanctions on individuals and countries in a national climate change emergency. So you could sanction countries that are producing oil.
You could put a sanction on the MBS guy who chopped up the reporter, right? Saudi Arabia, you could just say, oh, we're not going to buy any more oil from you.
Yeah, seriously,
Interesting.
Yep. So it does open a lot of avenues for halting some big deal things. The question is it democratic? Is it democratic?
So that's where it gets interesting, right? I mean, I think that one of the things we've warned about for a long time is that climate change is a threat to a liberal democracy, right? When things get tough, authoritarian responses are much easier, much faster, and in fact, much more effective because they can take place quickly. I mean, look at China, right? They can do a lot of stuff quickly because the president, the head of China just gives the order. And we talked in this show, oh, I don't know, 5 or 6 episodes ago, maybe more, about a book called The Climate Leviathan, which was a conscious imitation of a book from the 17th century, or the 1700s, I guess, called The Leviathan, which was a philosophical discussion of what sort of government would be most effective. Basically saying, after the kings are gone, what's the right kind of government to have? And the climate Leviathan went through questions of, you know, when climate has changed, when the world has warmed 2 degrees, what's the right form of government that protects us most? And that's that's a pretty big philosophical question, but it does drill back all the way down to the idea that you can imagine, as a climate hog, even with some enthusiasm, to say, oh, yeah, we should just have a national emergency. Forget Congress. Forget the Constitution. We need to have a national emergency and stop all the oil production on federal lands, right? Is that the right thing to do? I put it to you, Mariah. I'll be John McLaughlin from 30 years ago. Mariah, I put it to you. Is that the right thing to do?
I don't know. I think about my children and I think about how much I want them to have the same livable conditions that I've had. And I think whatever we have to do to make that happen, let's do it. I mean, you know, I certainly don't want to live in an I like democracy, and I think it's really important, but I also like a livable climate. And sometimes I think if it's a matter of life and death, you kind of have to choose life. And if that means someone's got to make some really strong decisions, maybe you take that. I wish that I, you know.
I hear all the quavering in your voice.
Yeah,
I mean, that's a tough call, right?
Yeah, it's not a good position to. You never want to be in a position where you say we made too many bad choices and now we need someone else to choose for us.
Yeah.
But it's like the misbehaving child, like, you know, that the 16-year-old Swedish who we talk about almost every episode, Greta Thunberg. You know, she said, you adults, you've misbehaved, right? You really messed up. And so now we're not asking you, we're telling you to do something about climate. And in some ways, I think that unfortunately that means you have to sacrifice maybe some democracy. I don't know. Like I said, I'll say something different the next episode. But,
well, I guess what my feeling is that, so we've all read the book Lord of the Flies, right? Which is basically, to my mind, a story about what happens to society when the rules are suspended and it's every person for himself, right? The thing that separates the world from the Lord of the Flies is process. And process is this dry, terrible thing because it's not very interesting, but it is it's the norms. It's all the stuff that Trump's violating. It's like, how do you make a decision and how do you include the right people in that decision? And once you abandon that, man, you're on a very slippery slope. So I guess I'm thinking that I'm stuck with the same thing. I mean, if it's a choice between going another 15 years waiting for the Republicans to finally decide that, in fact, they're willing to vote for a carbon tax, that's too long, right? So you can't have that. But the flip side is I would hate to be a participant in the destruction of the ability of people to control events in some meaningful way, right? To be able to participate in those big decisions. It's just, it never goes right. Ultimately, it never goes right. You might have Cincinnatus, the sort of Roman dictator, right? Cincinnatus was that he was named dictator for a year, and then at the end of the year, he put it down and went back to being a farmer, just like George Washington was president for two terms and didn't want to become king, right? These are noble guys who don't, but those are the exceptions, right? And I guess I'm against the idea of declaring a national emergency for climate stuff. But, you know, I've used the analogy in the past of saying an analogy about nuclear power, right? We say, okay, when the world is destroyed, we can look at each other and say, well, at least we didn't use nuclear power. Well, that's not a right place to be, right? If you need nuclear power, you need nuclear power to get through. Same thing is true here. I mean, I would hate to be in some future where the world is destroyed and I look at my wife and say, well, at least we didn't destroy the Constitution, right? At least we didn't declare a national emergency. We ruined the world, but we didn't do this other thing. I don't know. I'm very much split on this. I think it's a good philosophical debate because process is important.
I mean, so, here's, this would be my fear in, right, a kingdom or someplace where you have a ruler who is autocratic and who's not allowing freedom of choice or allowing the people to weigh in on the process. You have someone who's obscuring information, who's not giving you access to facts or truth, right? They're controlling the internet. They're controlling your access to learn. They have an agenda and they're not being transparent about that agenda. They're not sharing any of the information about why they're doing things the way that they're doing. And there's no accountability for anything. Those are the things that are scary, right? Those are the things you don't want to have happen because then you feel like you have lost the ability to understand what's going on and to have any sort of sensibility or control over it. If there's something like climate change that's declared as a national emergency, assumedly it would come with a whole artillery of facts about why it had to be a national emergency, right? You have to be able to support that in court, right?
Well, we can hope.
It's going to go to the court.
It's going to be a real emergency.
Right. I mean, they say, is this an emergency or not? Oh, wait, actually, it really is an emergency. So there's still that due process that can happen. And if it truly is an emergency, then I do want somebody to take charge and to do something about it, because they have way more, not that I mean, I of course believe strongly that I can have influence in many ways, but as president, I could have a lot more influence to make things happen in with the kind of speed that we need to work on this problem. We really do have 8 years, right? I mean, and we need to start today if we want things to be able to happen in a way that's going to continue this world as we know it better than as we know it. If we want Kiribati not to disappear, right? I mean, you know, we need to do this fast and assuredly, and it is an emergency.
Well, I guess, I mean, the closest analogy that I think is, well, the World War II analogy has been dragged out repeatedly for the Green New Deal, right? But the World War II analogy is relevant in the sense that it was clearly a national emergency. The president, acting in good faith, needed the powers. But at the same time, he had done the legwork, this is Roosevelt, I guess, of setting up the public opinion. So there wasn't any debate, or not much more debate after, say, Pearl Harbor, that everyone, we had to have this effort, right? So it was, in that sense, consistent with democracy, because we came through it after a few years, right? We were able to mobilize everything, and at the end, we still had a democracy, we still had the vote, we didn't have a dictator. Of course, Roosevelt was elected 4 times, which is a curious thing all by itself. So I guess what I'm thinking is that if there was a climate emergency and there was a bona fide patriotic president and the country was unified behind him, I think that that president could find a way, could find a way, even within the emergency declaration, to maintain democratic processes. And maybe that's the best you can hope for.
Well, I mean, you kind of also are touching on a good point, which is like, maybe if we just vote for candidates who support doing something about climate change, and we have every single candidate that's in, you know, in any kind of a leadership position is like, yes, I believe in climate change and I'm going to do something about it, we don't need a national emergency.
That's the other way to look at it.
Right. You know, so, you know, this is the time now, 2 years before the election, this is the time where we can make it so that there is a democratic process.
Yeah, absolutely.
We can make our voices loud and clear by choosing candidates and choosing platforms that really address climate change and making our voices heard, that's something we're going to vote on. If you're a candidate and you want our vote, Democrat or Republican, I want to hear you talk about your climate action plan.
And I would say I completely agree, that's an interesting sort of summary, although I got to add one. There is one of the presidential candidates who will go unnamed, but that person was saying that what we need is not just a president who talks the talk, but we need a movement that backs that person up, right? So if we have a president, I don't know, pick your favorite, there's 20 of them, right? Pick any one of them. That president talks about Green New Deal. They can't get anywhere unless they're backed up by strong grassroots action and a lot of people in Congress, right?
They need the social license to operate they need.
Exactly. I mean, not to go down a whole other path, but I think there's a fair debate about saying, should your senator, as part of the election process, should that senatorial candidate commit to overturning the filibuster? Because nothing's going to go through the Senate until the filibuster is over. Right? And we just spent time talking about the decay of democratic processes, right? And how we keep chiseling away at these things. But right now, you looked at even if there was a big movement, the Senate could still block things. I mean, what are you going to do? So that's a topic for another day, Mariah. We'll have to come back and go there. I'm not really sure how I feel about all that, but it's a legitimate question to think about. Oh my goodness. Well, look, we got to put it down there. We won't call you President Tinker. We'll call you Intergalactic leader for Empress of the Galaxy, right?
With my 150 special powers.
The 150 Anyhow, we will put up links to some of what we talked about, although most of this was a philosophical discussion. You can send us an email telling us your philosophy about national emergencies to podcast@massclimateaction.net. Please let us know what you think. The blog will be at massclimateaction.org/blog with links. We're on the Facebook @massclimateaction. You can listen to us directly on almost any of the modern podcast distribution apps. So go out there and check them out. You can look on Apple Podcasts for us as well. Search under Massachusetts Climate Action. So we'll close the way we close most of the time, almost all the time, because we recognize the necessity of personal accountability for our actions, because we accept responsibility for building a durable future, because we believe it's our patriotic duty as citizens to speak out. We must insist that the United States transform its energy sector over the next decade under a just and equitable plan, and that plan should use regulation, investment, and a price on carbon to safeguard our future. So, Mariah, thank you very much for your philosophical opinions tonight.
Thanks for prompting them.
Thanks, everyone, for listening in. We'll talk again soon. Bye-bye.
Very cool.